is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish Home Machine, which is perfect for these crazy times when gyms and schools are closed. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Coach Steve Moore, and you're listening to the Hoopheads Podcast.
Hey, Hoopheads, we all hate ankle sprains, and they happen way too often. Ankle injuries are the number one sports-related injury. Arise is trying to change that. With the iFast, your athletes get preventative protection and full mobility. Athletes no longer need to wear bulky braces that limit performance and give mediocre protection. Anyone playing sports should be using these products. Keep your athletes in the game. Don't wait for them to get hurt to take action. Visit www.arise.com, spelled A-R-Y-S-E, and use the code HOOPHEADS to get 20% off the future of performance. That's A-R-Y-S-E.com with promo code HOOPHEADS to get 20% off.
I think that's important. Be part of a team. That's been always my philosophy. Make it a good experience. Every kid needs a good experience. I don't care where you're at in the city, suburban, wherever. The kid needs coaching. They need structure. And that's part of our job. Give these kids structure and be part of their lives.
Tim DeBevic is the boys basketball varsity head coach at Jackson High School in Maslin, Ohio. DeBevic took over the Polar Bear program in 2011. Prior to that, Tim spent 18 years as an assistant coach at Rootstown, Talmadge, Glen Oak, and Jackson. DeBevic helped lead Jackson to a Division I state championship in 2010 as an assistant to current Mount Union head coach Mike Fuhlein, and then won another state title as the head coach in 2017. In addition to their two state titles, since 2010, Jackson has appeared in seven district finals, winning three, and earned six Federal League titles, making it one of the most well-respected public school basketball programs in the state of Ohio. DeBevic grew up in Barberton, Ohio, playing for Jack Reynolds Sr., and went on to play 1 year of college basketball at Urbana and his final three seasons at Walsh University. Don't miss our free Hoopheads Pod webinar series on Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern. If you miss a live webinar, you can buy lifetime access to any of our previous webinars for $4.99 on the Hoopheads Pod website. If you're focused on improving your coaching and your team, we've got you covered. Visit hoopheadspod.com/webinars to get registered. Make sure you check out our new Hoopheads Pod network of shows, including Thrive with Trevor Huffman, Beyond the Ball, the CoachMaze.com podcast, Players Court, Bleachers and Boards, and our team-focused NBA podcasts, Cavaliers Central, Grizz and Grind, Knuck If You Buck, The 305 Culture, Blazing the Path, and Hashtag Lakers. We're looking for more NBA podcasters interested in hosting their own show centered on a particular team. Shoot an email to info@hoopheadspod.com if you're interested in learning more and bringing your talent to our network. Grab your notebook before you listen to this episode with Tim DeBevic, boys varsity basketball coach at Jackson High School in Massillon, Ohio. Hello, and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are very pleased to welcome from Jackson High School here in the state of Ohio, Tim DeBevic, head boys varsity basketball coach. Tim, welcome to the Hoopheads Pod.
Hey, thanks for having me, Mike and Jason.
Absolutely. We are excited to have you on. Want to dig into all the great things that you've been able to do in the game of basketball. Want to start by going back in time to when you were a kid. Tell us a little bit about how you got into the game when you were younger.
You know, obviously, coming from a sports background with my dad, I mean, he played college baseball at Purdue and basketball in high school and football. So I was fortunate also to have two older brothers that played basketball. So It was always, you know, growing up competitive in the, I don't know, driveway, 2-on-2, and just, you know, wanted to be better than my brothers. They really inspired me to, you know, play basketball and sports, you know, eventually down in high school. But, you know, when you're young, you know, you got people to look up to, and my brother was awfully good, and I had an older brother just a year ahead of me, so always wanted to outdo him. But it's good that family time people, you know, forget about. But that goes back to my days, just starting with my family. That's important for me because my dad and my mom was always there to support us in sports and, you know, especially in basketball.
So when you were a kid, obviously you and I are the same age. So you go back and you think about that particular era of basketball growing up, and it was a different era than what we have today. So when you think about, you know, your first experience playing with your brothers on the driveway, when did you start to venture off the driveway and go and start to find pickup games and places to play, or, you know, working on your game by yourself? What did that look like for you as you got a little bit older?
You know, like you just mentioned, there wasn't a lot of AAU basketball back in 88 when we graduated. I think it just started to come out, you know, really heavy in early 90s. But we found, you know, back, like everybody talks, the old timers always talk about playing at the park and playing at the Barberton Parks all the time as a freshman. And obviously you had open gyms with the high schools, but every night, you know, I lived with my grandma in high school, me and my brother, and we just spent a lot of time at the parks. I mean, that's what we did at night. Obviously between homework and going to the park, I mean, we jogged to the park. There were 6-7 parks in Barton, and it's just the thing to do back there in the, you know, the late 80s and mid 80s. So we were fortunate that tons of people hung out at the park and played. I wouldn't obviously trust my daughters or my, if I had sons, to maybe go to the park. Heck, you might get shot or something happen. But no, that was good times. Look back, you know, you played a lot of good people at the parks, and that's where it starts. You know, we played like against good older kids. And even, you know, growing up, I played early in the morning. My dad played every morning, Monday, Wednesday, Friday at Barberton. Ritual, 6 to 7 o'clock, and then they shower and they go to work, you know, in the morning. So I was fortunate to, you know, go to morning open gyms with some older guys too. So there's some opportunities for us growing up, but it's, you know, kids do stuff that we got to organize now, and that's kind of how it is now.
Yeah, absolutely. When you think back to that, and you think about your development as a player, what do you think the playground system, I mean, it really obviously wasn't a system, but just growing up on the playground and playing pickup basketball, how do you think that impacted your development as a player? What do you think you got out of that that maybe a kid today doesn't get out of the system that we have in place currently?
You know, obviously, when you go to the park, you wanted to get picked up. So if you weren't good, you're not going to get picked up. So you had to work on your game. You know, you would stay later. I mean, there's times where you stay till the lights go off at midnight or 11 o'clock just to get better. But, you know, this is that drive that, you know, get picked up. You know, now everybody gets picked at open gyms. We got 4 or 5 courts going. Everybody's going to get a chance to play. But back then, one court, man, you lose, you have to go to the next park to play. So, you know, you just want to get good so you don't lose. And just had that desire, you know, just to keep getting better, not to lose, and try to prove something to these older guys to pick you up at the parks.
So when you were coming up and getting towards your high school years, when did you start to take the game more seriously and start to put in time, maybe by yourself, working on your game? And when you did that, what did that look like? Where did you go to figure out what you were going to do, or how did you go about putting together what it was that you wanted to work on at any given time when you went out and worked on your game by yourself?
You know, I was fortunate to play for a gentleman named Jack Reynolds Sr. at Barberton, you know, one of the greatest coaches of all times at Barberton. You know, his winning percentage was over 80%. He's one that, I don't know, play for him. They, you know, the Barberton Magics won a state title in 76, 77. I saw that growing up. But I was fortunate. You know, I lived by the high school with my grandma. So, you know, I walked over to the high school at night. I knew the custodian. I can get in there, shoot, work on my game. You know, back then, you know, you wanted to play in front of a sellout crowd at Barberton growing up as a 7th, 8th grader. I mean, it'd be standing room only, you know. You remember the names of Mark and Marty Bonner that played at Michigan, and Carter Scott played at Ohio State. So you know, it's just like anything else. You looked up to them guys, and then you wanted to be that next guy, and just to be like them, maybe to play in front of that sellout crowd, and worked hard. You know, you do stuff on the side. You go down to the basement at grandma's house or dad's and mom's, and just get better to maybe be that guy to play in front of a sellout or get to Columbus.
Did you go to games a lot when you were a kid, like in elementary school? Were you going to games growing up?
Yeah, you know, I went to a lot of games. You know, my older brother went to Copley, so I got a chance to see him, you know, play a lot of great games. And obviously, Barber and I seen Barber go to state in 76, 77, and 82. So I love going to, you know, the high school games. My dad took me to state tournament games starting, you know, I think in 85, you know, when I was a freshman. And I probably go every year now. I've been probably down to Columbus probably 35, 40 plus times. And just being around the game, everybody's goal was always get to Columbus as a kid. And just being down there was kind of a neat thing with my mom and dad or my brothers go down. So
do you miss St. John Arena? Do you miss St. John Arena?
Oh man, it's coming back in 2 years. So
yeah, I heard.
We're good enough, we can get down there one more time in my coaching career. That'd be neat, man. St. John's is a special place. You know, you watch them games growing up down there, and I know you've been down there to see St. John games, but we'll see. It'll be interesting, you know, bringing them back to St. John's, how it looks, and maybe they keep it there. But this season, I've seen so many games down there, Ohio State games, the, you know, Ohio High School state championship games. So you grow up with it, and you go down there and you just want that. That's your goal as a little kid. You know, you've been around it. You know, I think aspirations of, you know, growing around a great coach like Coach Grenell's really wanted you to get into coaching and playing the ball and maybe going to college.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you think about going into your high school career, what are some of your – give me one or two memories that stick out to you as a high school player, something that you remember that you're going to carry with you for the rest of your life?
You know, there are so many great times. Obviously, my brother graduated 87 to play with my brother for 3 years at Barberton. You know, we had a chance, obviously, opportunity to go to Columbus probably 3 years in a row. Unfortunately, you know how it is. You got to get some breaks and get lucky. You know, a bad memory, but I always remember, I mean, I get on my brother all the time. I mean, we lost in 87 in double overtime in the regional, the game not to lose against McKinley in front of 5,000 people. And that was the last game that Coach Grenell's obviously coached before he was having a stroke my senior year. But that memory right there alone, playing with my brother all them times and seeing my family at Barber games. Every game, home game, was sold out in 3 years. The crowds, you know, the fans back then was crazy. And all my buddies, you know, it's changed now. You know, I think the whole student section used to come out. We used to get 200-300 students at the Barber game, home games. That's not the case anymore. I miss those type of days. You know, you go in the gym and just you're playing in front of sellouts, and that was exciting. You know.
Do you think that can ever come back? Do you think we can ever get that back, or do you think because of the way that society has kind of moved with everybody just being entertained by their own device that they're carrying around, there's just so many more different things. Do you think we'll ever get back to that consistently where we can have that kind of school spirit and that kind of community support? I mean, maybe every once in a while you find a community that still has that, but I think you're right that it's very few and far between anymore. Do you think we can get back to that?
And you ask my coaches, every time I get bent out of shape when we don't have a lot of fans at the game, especially if you're good, or they should just come out anyway, just to, for something to do, keep them off the street, support all each other's programs. God, I miss that, man. That's just one thing that kind of burns me as a coach right now. Just everybody not, you know, supporting each other's. I mean, we support each other, but we're coming to the games. You know, there's so many things going on with, like you're talking about technology and kids involved in different things. But I pray it comes back. And like you said, there's instances that there's a good community support. Obviously, winning, you know, they'll come out. But it's just more than that. I think it's just a atmosphere that you want to create, but God, I pray it comes back. I mean, I don't know how much longer I got, but hope students come back out. I think you got to work on it now. You know, it's not back in the day where the kids came and had fun. But you grew up. I mean, there's, you know, 200, 300 students there at the games. I was fortunate being a good atmosphere with Jack Reynolds Senior or Junior coaching my first years at Talmadge, we sell out the student section, you know, 150 students every game. So it's going to come back, I hope. I mean, pray. I miss those days. You know, it's exciting. You know, you get there and kids are chanting and big crowds come in. And kind of gives you the chills back, you know, back when you played in high school. So
yeah, it's so much more fun to play and coach in an atmosphere where you have fans. And in all honesty, like, I don't care whether it's you're at home and the fans are for you or whether you're on the road and the fans are against you. I think either way, it just adds to the excitement and the thrill of being a part of high school basketball. And I think it, you know, in a lot of places, that's missing. You know, sometimes you go to a game and you're like, man, there's no atmosphere here. And it's just, as a player or as a coach, that's difficult, I think, sometimes I guess kids today probably don't know any differently. Like, if they went back and played in the environments that you or I had a chance to play in front of them, play in, that they probably would be like, whoa, what's this all about? So maybe it's a case of they don't know what they're missing. But man, I just think when you get an opportunity, whether it's to play or to coach in front of a raucous crowd, there's nothing like that.
Yeah, that's pretty special. You know, I mean, obviously been involved in a couple of state championships and a couple of good teams, you know, coaching and even playing at Barberton, but just the people that's missing, man. I don't know. It's just not, like you said, there's nothing like it showing up at a Friday night sellout crowd in front of 2,400 people at Jackson. And don't get me wrong, we've had some sellouts, but it's been a long time since 2017, maybe, that we've had a standing room only, that the fire marshal will have to come in. But I don't know. I mean, obviously, people don't understand. Like, if you're good, they might, even when you're good sometimes, like you're talking, it's not sold out like it should be, rival games. And I know your rival, maybe it was, I don't know, Strongsville, was Medina or somewhere up.
Brunswick, Brecksville, those were probably our two biggest rivals when I was playing.
So, you know, down here, you know, coaching, you know, Lake and North Canton and McKinley, and we our league's pretty big, and you know, we get decent crowds, but like you're saying, man, it's nothing like selling it out, standing room only, for the kids' sake. You know, you want the kids to enjoy that atmosphere. That's kind of, you look like, God, this kind of stinks for the kids. But like you said, I hope it comes back. It's fun coaching, teaching at schools that just support your programs and fill the stands, you know. And we're pretty fortunate, Jackson, our superintendent, our administration are pretty supportive. And so
that makes a big difference, no question. I think it's really tough to be a successful coach in any sport if you don't have that support of your administration. You don't have an administration that's going to, you know, support you in the things that you need to do in order to build a quality program.
Yeah. You know, sports goes a long way for, I mean, I could sit here and talk to you all day what sports have done with me, basketball at least. You know, I say this all the time, it's gave me everything in my life. You know, my job, my college career. I would never got an education through college, and met my wife through sports or basketball. And, you know, obviously you look at my house, my three daughters, and it's all revolved around boys basketball in a way. It comes back to meet my wife through my best friend through high school. So it just kind of just circles around basketball for me, at least, everything I got in life. So,
yeah, it's that old saying, right? The ball has magic in it, and it really does. I mean, it connects people in a way that I think somebody who's not involved in it really can't have a full and complete understanding of just how important the game of basketball is to a guy like you or a guy like me who's lived it. You know, you've lived it your entire life. Like, I don't know anything. I don't know anything different. I don't know anything else. It's just been such a huge part of who I am. You mentioned, you know, getting an opportunity to play college basketball. Talk a little bit about your college decision coming out of Barberton, and then what your college basketball experience was like.
You know, back then you played in maybe a couple all-star games, and you know, you're just praying maybe someone will see you that maybe get you a scholarship. I wasn't really fortunate to. I had some looks, you know, Division II, NAIA schools, nothing, you know, high level, but. You know, a couple of schools saw me playing an all-star game and offered me scholarships. So I was thinking off the bat, you know, can I help my parents out and maybe get a full ride somewhere? So when I first got my first ride for a full ride at Brandon University, which is no longer existing right now, they closed down this year. It was NAI school. So, you know, my big thing, I wanted to go play college ball. I thought it was, you know, be away about 2.5 hours, 2 hours, close enough where my parents can come see me play. But, you know, after that, I transferred to Walsh University to be a little closer to my family, just so my mom and dad maybe can come to the games, my brothers and sisters. So I had a good career. You know, it was, you know, probably took me 5 years to get out, but I enjoyed every minute of it. I was fortunate to play in front of a lot of good, you know, play with a lot of good coaches, you know, at Walsh University. I still talk to Bob Roney's son that coaches at Mount Vernon Nazarene. So you build relationships.
Yeah, Jared's going to come on the podcast. We got him scheduled in the next couple of weeks, so he's going to come on. So I'm looking forward to that one too.
He's a good guy. You know, you build relationships through, you never know what kind of comes to your path. My college roommate was, you know, Jeff Young at Walsh University. So he's the head coach now. My college roommate's the principal at Alliance High School. A lot of good relationships you still connect with. And the travel aspect, you know how it was at Kent State. You guys traveled all over, got a chance. I never flew in my life until I went to Walsh University. So we didn't grow up really flying everywhere like my kids do now. And we fly all over the place with my daughters and my wife. So that was my first aspect of when I was 22 years old at Walsh University. We made it to the national championship to fly out to Boise, Idaho. So in that alone, you know, going to Florida trips with the college and travel and just that connect. I still connected with a lot of the guys at Walsh University when I played there for 3 years. So, you know, this the travel and Coach Lloyd, Fretters, I mean, I had three coaches at Walsh. So you learn something new from each coach. You pick up, maybe steal a couple ideas. And like I said, I go back to, you know, I get through college because of maybe college hoops. And I ran track at Walsh University, too, my first couple of years, just to piece something together with the scholarship. So we had a good run at Walsh. I mean, 29-5, you know, we beat St. Bonaventure, Division I school. And just a fun, I don't know, smaller school for me. It was NAI school at the time. It's Division II now. So just to continue, my buddies just come down. You know, I was about 35 minutes, 40 minutes from home. A lot of my buddies came down from high school just to see me play, which was cool, and family. So it was fun times. You know, I mean, like I said, it got me through and then kind of inspired me to be a coach and, you know, starting back with Coach Girls at Barberton and kind of carried over in college just to be move forward in my coaching career.
Was coaching always on the radar, or was it something that as you started to see your playing career winding up that you said, hey, I really want to stay involved in the game and let me figure out a way to be a coach? Or was it something that you kind of always had in the back of your mind growing up?
You know, just when I went to Barberton, I kind of saw Coach Grinnell's how he coached and acted and just kind of absorbed and sponged everything he was doing. And from there, probably started like, hey, I might want to coach going to teaching. And so that's where it kind of started. And then I built really good relationships with some of the coaches at Walsh. And then when Steve Lloyd took over before he passed away, we had a good relationship about, he kind of meant and relayed, this was going to happen. You know, if you want to be a coach, I'll help you out. Or, you know, expect this because he coached at the high school level too before he went to college. So just always wanted to help kids out and going to coaching. So it's a journey, you know how it is. I mean, I'll tell you here in a second how many places I've stopped and how I got into coaching, but it might be a 2-hour segment, but it was a good, you know, start for me at Walsh, just get a feel for what coaches are. Cause I had three coaches in college at Walsh and then one at Urbana.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things that's interesting is when you get an opportunity to play for multiple coaches and then you become a coach, I think you have a wider breadth and understanding of some of the things that, you know, that there's different ways to go about doing things. I think about my own experience and I played for one high school coach, one college coach. And so then when I became a coach, my first job out of school, I was coaching the JV team in Bay Village and I did that for 2 years. And I look back on my time there and basically I just did, the only thing I knew was the two coaches that I had played for. So everything we did was based on that. And I wasn't, for whatever reason, at that point, I came out of my playing career and I look back on it now and like, I wasn't really at that point interested in going to coaching clinics or I wasn't studying the game. It was kind of like, no, I was a good player, so I must be a good coach. And I think about that now and think about how bad I probably was as a coach those first 2 years because I just, I just never, I only had experience with two coaches, and I never really went out and tried to seek any other experiences. And so therefore I just based everything I did off what I had experienced as a player. And I wish, looking back retrospectively, I really wish that I had taken the time and really dedicated myself more to becoming a better coach early on, because I think I would have been, a lot better for the kids, you know, and I think I probably would have enjoyed it more had I not, you know, had I gone and done something more than what I had just learned from the coaches that I had. Had you ever thought about coaching at the college level? Did that ever cross your mind as you were getting done, or did you always have in your mind that high school coaching and teaching was kind of where you wanted to be?
I think I kind of wanted to be in high school. Never had that huge admiration of maybe going to college, but you know, it comes back to, you know, I remember being at the park where I grew up in Barberton and seeing Coach Grenell's son, Jack Grenell's Jr., which has been, he was pretty successful at Roostown and Talmadge and Glen Oak. He went to Columbus. But I remember the day when I got an opening at Roostown when I was 22, 23 years old. Hey, would you like to come at Roostown and be the JV coach? So just staying connected with Coach Grenell's son, Jr., got my start at Roostown. And he kind of painted the picture of, listen, you better go watch some different practices if you want to study the game. So we used to always go out and watch practices. We'd go watch Stowe practice because Talmadge was pretty close to Stowe, and Coach Close did some nice things, and he would take me to Kent State's practice. I remember watching you at Kent State when I was at Talmadge. And at other places, you know, we went to Kent State, Akron. We were fortunate that we were surrounded by a lot of colleges. We'd go down to Walsh University, and we try to pick the, you know, the coaches that you probably, you know, you think about, hey, they're successful. Why are they successful? And Jack Jr. said, let's go watch these practices and see what they do and kind of steal some ideas, you know, the good ones steal and then kind of incorporate the yourself. And so he's kind of just set that stone, you know, that he kind of, hey, this, you better do this. If not, you're not going to be successful. So, you know, got to give him a lot of credit of, you know, helping me out early in my career. Being a JV coach at Roostown, and I remember Jack getting thrown out and have to take over varsity at early age of 23. So imagine that, you know, him getting thrown out of a game. But that was good times. You know, from Roostown, I went to Talmadge and with Jack, and we had a successful program. We were one game for, you know, losing the regional finals back in 2001 with Maddox and that group. So here in a second, when, you know, once we get into it, I went some other places after that too. So,
what do you remember about that first experience as a JV coach at Roostown, as far as getting up in front of your team for the first time and trying to make it work? And just what do you remember about being? What was difficult about it? What do you think you were pretty good at right from the get go? What do you think you were like? Ooh, you look back and you say, man, I really wasn't very good at that piece of it.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I think I was all right when I was in the locker room with them, but you know, or one-on-one, you know, you're nervous. It's like you're 23 years old. Back then, I mean, you appreciate this. Now we got like 20 coaches on our bench. You know, back then, back then it was the varsity coach that got a stipend and the JV coach back at a small school. So there's two of us. So there's no looking around like, I got, you know, go in there and talk to this, because, you know, Jack was going to help me a little bit, but he wasn't going to be in the locker room with me. So I kind of got thrown in the fire with Jack, because he's like, hey, go in there and talk to him. And, you know, I listened to him and his old man, and been through it with college. But, you know, it was, you know, you kind of get better as the year on. That's why I was a JV coach here and then 3 years JV coach at Talmadge. And I eventually just became assistant coach at a couple of places. But that helped me maybe talk in front of the kids early, get comfortable. And I think that was a big part of this, you know, this kind of have your own team. I think it's great to have your own team. I mean, I've been assistant coach for 15 years, 10, 12 years, and it's different when you got your own team, you know, as a JV level. And that's, you know, the now coaches, they think they just go straight from the top. Like, I wasn't that guy that was like, I'm 23, 24. I should be a head coach somewhere. All right. I wanted to learn from Jack. You know, you want to get better every year. I'm not going to jump from, you know, I always tell guys, start at eighth grade. Start coaching eighth grade and move up to ninth. And I think you experience that whole thing, you appreciate it more.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt. That's one of the things that when I got my first job after I coached the JVs for 2 years, I thought that was really valuable. And then went and became a varsity assistant. I was a varsity assistant for don't know, 11, 12, 13 years. I can't even remember now how many years it was, but we had kind of the same staff. And there was one year where our JV coach left and he went and got a head job. And so I kind of took over. I was still helping out with the varsity, but then I was also the JV coach. And so I hadn't really run my own team for like probably 10 years at that point. And so it was a big adjustment to go back from just being sitting on the bench and, you know, maybe making some substitutions or giving suggestions to all of a sudden, now I'm the person up there. I got to figure out when to call timeout. I got to figure out who's going in the game. I got to figure out what we're running. I got to diagram things in timeouts. I got to do all that stuff. And so I think it's very easy that if you're an assistant coach, there's a big, big adjustment to going from that one seat over on the bench where now you have to make all those decisions. And I always felt like that one year that I coached JV after not having been in charge of my own team for 10 years or so, that was a challenge for me. There was no doubt because I just didn't have those game management skills because I just hadn't gotten the reps.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, you step over, you know, 18 inches, man, your heart rate goes up. You worry about and think about different things all of a sudden. You know, it's easier sitting, being an assistant coach. You know, I can, you know, be an assistant for Jack. And then I've coached under a lot of different guys. You know, I ended up not getting a job at Talmadge when he left to go to Buchtel. But I ended up going to Green. I coached under Kinsley for a year. I was fortunate. You know, Kinsley did his way different. You know, good different. And then I got the chance to coach at North Camp with Randy Montgomery. That's won 600 games. So to see different styles, for me, it was good. Reynolds to Kinsley to Montgomery. And then obviously built that relationship I was talking about in the beginning with, you know, I got to know Mike through Green and playing at Suburban League at Talmadge. So Mike hired me at Jackson. So I coached at Glen Oak, once again, another school with Jack. When he took that job with Coop, I coached Kufis and C.J. McCollum at Glen Oak for 2 years. So I was at some different head coaches. It was kind of good. You learn some stuff, and then you kind of incorporate your own opinion or your own style of basketball or coaching. So that path was pretty good for me. You know, you turn down some head coaching jobs. You know, I guess it's meant to be, or the cliche of that, how things work out. You know, you always talk to these college coaches that come in. It's like, what kind of path did you do? You know, and it's kind of interesting where guys have been and connected and, it's who you know sometimes and getting the right program. So I was very fortunate in that aspect of getting to know Coach Schuline and Reynolds to help me and Kinsley and Montgomery.
So while you were working at all these different places under all these different coaches, you clearly had it in the back of your mind at some point that you wanted to become a head coach, I'm guessing. So what did you do to sort of prepare yourself for the day when you would be able to take over your own program? Were you taking notes, writing things down? Were you just kind of cataloging it mentally? Just what was your process for making sure that you were able to soak in all the lessons that you were learning from the guys that you had an opportunity to work for so that when it was time for you to take over a program, you could draw on the knowledge that you had gained over those years?
I look back, I got a big Rubbermaid container of like practice plans. I was a big, you know, I'm going to keep these practice plans every year, staple it. You know, go back and say, you know, what do we do in practice, game situations? And start now I started to calculate some stuff like when I go get interviewed for a head coaching job, what's important? You know, obviously the youth program, they're big on now and your philosophies and all that. But I used to always, you know, this practice, I would always keep practice plans and just go, you know, afterwards, after practice, you know, what can we use? I circle stuff, highlight stuff. So just to get ready, you know, I wanted to, you know, be ready when I, you know, apply for a couple of jobs, which I did. And, you know, opportunity come, I'm hopefully I'm ready. You know, I was in a good situation with Mike and I knew down the road, I knew he was going to maybe move on and maybe I had an opportunity to coach and got lucky, you know, sometimes you get lucky. And I say that to people and just being in the right place at the right time for me at Jackson was a perfect situation. Obviously, Larry, I always tell people Larry Taylor started at Jackson, that took him to Columbus 2 years, and then Mike won a state championship in 2010. So just been very fortunate, I mean, and blessed that, you know, I took over a good program. Was there pressure? Yeah. But like you said, just the journey of being an assistant coach all these years, you know, maybe paid off or being around different guys. And it wasn't easy, I can tell you that. And, you know, the pressure, you know, you listen, you're you're following, you know, Larry Taylor that's won 400 games and Mike Phelan has won a state championship. So, you know, things ain't easy, but, you know, the opportunity was there. I think it was just good for me, my family, and the timing of my coaching career.
All right, so before we jump into all the success that you've been able to have at Jackson and kind of how you've done that and continued the tradition that was there before, let's talk a little bit about the interviewing process, because you mentioned a couple times that you went on some different interviews. So for coaches out there who maybe are assistant coaches right now that are looking for their first opportunity to become a varsity head coach, what advice would you have for them going into and preparing for an interview to be a head varsity basketball coach? What are some things that they should be thinking about heading into an interview?
You know, just being around other coaches and seeing what, you know, maybe some having their, I always ask for their resumes to what do they do when they go into interviews? What do they take? I remember spending $250 on one interview of just tons of stuff. How I was going to run a program, starting with the youth, to open gyms, the off season stuff, the season practices, the practice plans, the you name it, everything they pertain, you know, to basketball, the whole, my philosophy, my coaching, what we're going to do all year long. It's going to be it's going to be a 12-month process, and every month I broke down what we're going to do in each month. I think that's important that they want to hear that hey, you're invested, you care, you know, how you're going to, you know, go about, you know, building this program and keeping up on top. And we'll go into this interview. When I interviewed some of these places, you know, you have some people, two or three people we interview. There's been places where, you know, 10 people were in an interview. I'll never forget to this day, I wear a suit and it was a 2-hour interview at Jackson. And holy crap, you know, it's for real. You know, I'm in there for 2 hours interviewing a suit and tie. And there's the president of the booster club to superintendent, assistant superintendent, athletic director of the high school, athletic director of the middle school, board members. I mean, it was an eye opener, you know, but you got to be ready to come in there and perform. The stuff that was, I walked out of the interview like, wow, that just happened. 2-hour interview. You got to be ready for a, there's times where you go in there for a 30-minute interview. I know Coach Grinnell's interviewed and booked him for a 30-minute, they gave him the job. There's times where I've been in interviews for 40 minutes and it was kind of a token interview, but it was good for me just to interview. Knowing going into it, like, you know, there's, you know how it was back in the day when there's 40 applicants, you were just lucky to maybe get an interview.
Yep.
And so I was fortunate. I interviewed several places and, you know, it didn't work out, but I was prepared. I mean, I can't go back. You know, I always spent, you know, anywhere between $100 and $200 on the interview process, and you just hope it pays off. And you got to prepare. I mean, you got to have that stuff. If not, then, you know, at the end of the day, you can say, hey, I did my best. I went in there and told him what I was going to do, and I was prepared. And even though knowing you going into the interview, I knew going into one interview that the one guy's going to get it, I didn't care. I wanted to go in there and interview and just tell them what I was going to do for their program. So regardless what happens at the end of the day, you feel like, hey, lay down at night, you did your job, and you gave it your all. I mean, that's all you can ask for as a person going into an interview. So and that's all I thought about. You know, Coach Grinnell's gave me that advice, and some other people, you know, yeah, you better be prepared, because they're gonna ask you questions from, like I said before, the big youth question to how you gonna handle kids that get in trouble, to how you gonna handle yourself in games, you're gonna get thrown out, you better not cuss, whatever, you know, them type of questions.
Right, right, so, yep.
Discipline.
Do you remember any goofy questions? You remember like a funny question that somebody asked you that was kind of off the wall? Anything that sticks out in that area?
You know, there's been some interesting ones, because, you know, you go in there and some of the people in the interview process probably shouldn't be in there.
Yeah.
Like, you go in there like, coach, how's your curriculum going to be in your classroom compared to your coaching? I'm like, what? You're thinking you're interviewing for a basketball job, and they're actually like, how are you going to handle your phys ed students? Like, all right, you know, this curriculum director probably hasn't seen a basketball game in 20 years at the school that you interview for, but they're in the interview process just to have another person in there. So
nothing
really stands out, but this, you go in these interviews, you don't know who's going to be in these interviews sometimes. I mean, it's just, it's amazing who sits in the interviews, but yeah, parents, we had parents sit in at a couple of interviews I've been in, and players. So it's been a lot of, a wide variety of people. The biggest one that stands out, obviously, when I interviewed for the Jackson job, there's 12 people in there. So it was kind of an awkward thing, but I don't know. I guess that was their process.
There you go. All right. So let's jump into what you've been able to do at Jackson. Let's start here. Obviously, the program has a tremendous amount of success, a great tradition, a recent state title. How do you go about coming in with the idea that you want to take advantage of that tradition? And clearly, there's a lot of good things in place. And yet, I'm sure there are things that you as the assistant coach that you looked at and you said, boy, I think we could really improve this. Or here's an area where I think we can get some gain. Or here's an area where I think we can get better. So how did you go about sort of walking that fine line between, boy, we've had a tremendous amount of success here, and yet at the same time, wanting to do things the way that you believe was the best way to continue that success? So how did you walk that line where you didn't, I guess, look down at the past or say, oh boy, we got to change this, and that still be able to kind of do the things that you believed in?
You know, me and Mike had similar philosophies, obviously, Fuline, and I mentioned, you know, me and Grenells used to go watch Jackson play when Larry Taylor coached there because, you know, they had the Bosleys and they had a great team, you know, and Larry did a great job kind of like developing, like getting the youth program started. And I think Mike took it to the next level, got the board, got the travel stuff going, just kind of soaking all that stuff in. And truth be told, I didn't want the program to slip, man. I'm a born worry word. I don't know where I get it, probably from my mom, but I worried every night, man. You know, probably had a heart attack my second year being head coach here. And that was a big thing on the back of my mind. I want to be visible. I think you had to be visible at everywhere. I went to so many youth travel games. I spoke at a lot of, you know, Kiwanis, the Jackson Rotary. I just wanted to be visible. I went to every football game, every volleyball game. And the big thing, this, you know, build a relationship with the parents and getting involved. And we kind of took over like doing all the travel tryouts, the whole varsity staff. We spent 2 or 3 days doing that. And I said, my big thing is one to keep the program going. I didn't want to be that coach. And I don't know if this sounds bad, but, DeBevic ruined the program after Mike left and Larry. and that happens. And I shouldn't feel that way, but I kind of like that was on the back of my mind, like, God dang, we better win, and the pressure to win. I wanted to try to just be myself, but I wanted to create some atmosphere and do some different things too, you know, like every coach wants to. They want to create your own. I wanted to press more. I wanted to travel and see our kids to play the toughest schedule. And during the summer, we're going to make sure we travel to every team camp we could possibly travel to. And just be, it was. I think I got my first 2 years getting probably in too deep where I finally had to have a better balance to say, like, it was basketball first and family was probably a distance, you know, second or third, and that wasn't good. So until I got to that balance, I think I finally got in that better place of coaching and teaching and being with my family, and things started to work out a little better because, you know, you want to win. You want the kids to have a good experience. That was always what I worry about, is the kids going to have a good experience. We started to fly to Florida and do trips like that. And I just tried to do some different things to maybe keep the program on top. And in the back of my mind, it's like, gosh, we have a chance. You know, you always want to change. You know how it is, you coach. We had a chance. I always say we have a chance. We had about 6 chances to get to Columbus since I've been head coach. And you only get there one time as a head coach. I mean, make it to the regional a couple times the year that – you know, I'm still mad about, I'll be honest with you, 2014. We should have went to Columbus, but things work out for a reason. And then, you know, everybody talked about this group we had in 2017 and the pressure of that. And yeah, there's pressure, but, you know, I finally got to a better place that year. I didn't enjoy it until we got down to Columbus, but we just had to get down there, you know, and soak it all in. So, like I said, I don't know.
What do you think was the key to being able to maybe let go of some aspects of the program, which it sounds like when you first come in, you have your hand in everything. You're directly supervising everything is what it sounds like to me. How did you go about, was it a matter of finding the right people that you trusted to take over some of the tasks that allowed you to then sort of step back a little bit and kind of perform as the CEO rather than the frontline worker on every single aspect of the program? Or was it something else that you did that enabled you to step back just a little bit and yet be able to have the program continue to get better and improve and be at the level that you wanted it to be?
You know, I think it started out with, you know, having our youth program, because we do everything kindergarten all the way through varsity. Everything's incorporated with one program. It's the Booster Club supports every program from kindergarten through. So having that support group, you know, having good presence to help me. I met with the president of our Booster Club probably once a week, and I go over his house and how we're going to keep building this thing. And we had great presidents that had vision of, I wanted to make sure that the president, we've had great presidents that kind of had visions that, hey, we're going to keep this thing moving, improving the program. And my big philosophy was, I always go into our Booster Club meetings once a month, and I haven't missed one since I've been at Jackson in you know, 15 years, whatever, 16 years. But I always told them, guys, this ain't my program. This is everybody's program in the community. And I emphasize, like, listen, you guys speak up. If we can better our program, let us know. And we had guys that really, you know, we've been fortunate that guys that really helped out, that kind of took it to the next level. Like, we do some different things and have their input, and our coaches go to the Booster Club's meetings, and it helps out living a mile from the high school. And that was a huge thing. I never thought I'd live in the district where I teach and coach, but how much time we spent over there at the high school and the middle schools and elementaries, you had to be close. And I wasn't a firm believer of that first, but once I realized how much time it's going to be to keep it moving and you get to that next level again, you had to be close to the high school.
All right. So what does the youth program look like in terms of your involvement? I know one of the things that I've always been a big proponent of, and I've talked to numerous coaches about this on the podcast, and I think it's something that when I look around at successful public school programs, I see varsity coaches who are deeply involved with those youth players, and those kids know who the varsity coach is. They know who the varsity players are. They want to someday grow up to play for that varsity coach, put on that uniform. And I think that's something that it's not nearly as prevalent as it was back in the days when you and I were playing. I grew up from the time I was in second grade and moved to Strongsville and went to games with my dad. I just knew that someday I wanted to put on a Mustang uniform and play for the high school. And I think in a lot of places that doesn't necessarily exist anymore. So what do you do as the varsity head coach? How do you build the program so that that's what's happening, so that the kids want to be a part of the program? And then how do you use the program to develop the skills and knowledge of the kids so that they're prepared to eventually become a part of the varsity program?
You know, my coaches think I'm crazy, but like in the summertime when we have these two or three camps, so guys, our goal is to have 400 campers in one week. And that's huge. You know, you have 400 kids in 1 week, we're going to be all right. We get more kids, you get involved, the better the program will be. So we started off with having just a, you know, an all-day camp, 9 to 3, and just being visible there. And we have another skills camp. And then we have this huge, make a big thing on, hey, let's have our travel teams only camp. And it starts there, you know, and the kids know you because I'm there every camp. Our whole varsity staff picks the travel programs. We got 2 third grade teams, 3 fourth, 3 fifth, 3 sixth grade travel teams. So it's just the hard part of maybe getting head coaches for them travel programs. My coaches, I used to do kindergarten sessions. I don't probably do them. The last 2 years I haven't did them, but I show up at the kindergarten levels, and we want our varsity guys there, you know, working camp. Our varsity guys work camps. We have a youth, we have a youth tournament here with over 100 teams now, and our kids work the camps. All our coaches know all the youth kids because we pick the travel teams. We'll take 3-4 days and picking the third grade travel, the fourth grade travel, the fifth, sixth. And then obviously I work at the middle school, so I try to build a relationship with seventh and eighth grade. I can go down every kid in the seventh and eighth grade, especially eighth grade since I got twin daughters in eighth grade. But Them boys better stay away from them. But no, I just think it's important, man, to know every. You look at these things like I'll show up on a Sunday morning with some coffee and up at Talmadge and watch three or four games in a row, and people look at you like, man, coach kind of. I think he does care about the program. I think that goes a long way with parents, starting to know the parents even, you know, in third, fourth, fifth travel and start building them relationships early because, you know, let's face it, I mean, every sport's all year round right now. And that's what's kind of killing our youth sports, I think, because kids think they got to, you know, zone in on a sport in third or fourth grade. That shouldn't be the case. Yes, you want to get everybody involved. I think kids should be playing two or three sports all the way through eighth grade. That's just my opinion. There's parents that, you know, their kids playing soccer all year round, baseball all year round. They're playing tennis all year round. But our philosophy was to get more people involved. Maybe someone will grab a niche to the basketball. And we've had players that, as an eighth grade, maybe not even play in eighth grade. And all of a sudden, they're varsity kids. You know, I can tell you stories and stories at Jackson here where we keep 12 kids on the eighth grade team. We got two eighth grade teams, two seventh grade teams of 12. And all of a sudden, the 12th man on one of the eighth grade teams as a junior starting on varsity. How's that happen? I think it's just being around and maybe supporting them kids, you know, and kind of just encouraging them to stay with it. And I think that's it goes a long way, you know, being visible. I learned from Mike and a couple of these coaches that didn't maybe was visible. You know, why ain't he around? Where's the head coach at? And that's cliche, I guess. I mean, the head coach should be at everything, but it's tough. It's not easy to be at everything. I can only be at one place at one time. I speak at the 7th, 8th grade banquets every year, you know, just trying to be there for them. But once again, it goes back to, you know, if you care and you're going to put the time in. That's, you got to put a lot of time. It takes a lot of time, man, to maybe get to that next level. I say to the next level, maybe get to Columbus, to maybe win a state championship, to win a Federal League title, you know, a title for us. So there's a lot of hours. I mean, I think you got to be, you know, you know how it is. I mean, coaches, you got to have special wives and family that, you know, support you 100%. If not, sometimes it don't work out. And I've been fortunate in that aspect of my wife's been good about that, my three daughters.
I think that visibility piece that you talked about, to me, that's so critically important. I think when you combine the visibility of the head coach and being involved and knowing your kindergartners, knowing your second graders, knowing your seventh graders, all the way up through the top of your program, to me, there's nothing more valuable than that because, again, it just points out to those younger kids that, hey, someday I'd like to play for that guy. And, hey, that guy cares enough about me to show up on a Saturday morning or show up on a Sunday morning. And I think to go along with that, when you have your players involved in your youth program, when you have your high school players come down and give back and be a part of it, to me, that's something that's tremendously valuable simply because I tell people all the time that one of the things that I look back on most fondly as a young kid is when I was in Strongsville and we played through our whatever at that point, it was just our rec basketball program, but the coaches on Saturday morning were the high school players. And I still have guys that were my coaches that, you know, I still consider those guys friends. I still see them. And same thing when I became a high school player and I coached young guys. And there's still people that I stay in contact with that I coached when I was a high school player and they were in elementary school. And those bonds don't go away. And the fact that you're building those between your varsity players and the kids that are younger that are in your community, to me, that's incredibly, incredibly valuable. And I think that when people see that, and it's not just the kids, but the parents and your administration and fellow teachers and people that are part of your athletic department and boosters, when they see that you're willing to put in that kind of time, I think it just, again, it just sells yourself. It sells the credibility of what you're trying to do as a program. And when I think about going along with that, when you not only do you have the visibility piece, but when you have and are putting coaches in place for those younger levels for the travel teams, what are you doing to educate those coaches on what you'd like them to be teaching at those lower levels? Are you doing a coaching clinic? Are you going down and showing up at a practice and maybe showing them, hey, you should do this? How do you go about positively impacting those coaches who are part of the youth program in Jackson?
you know, to start out with the youth, we go down, like you're saying, we have a clinic, and then we do some skill sessions with just the travel kids. But it's so valuable that we just go over the basic stuff with the youth coaches. We've been pretty fortunate. We've had some good youth coaches that coach in our program. It's just so hard. People talk about, you know, who you're going to get to coach them teams. And it's hard. It's usually just dads. Let's face it. You know, every program, you can't go out and hire 12 coaches at third, fourth, fifth, and sixth. Right, I can't hire Mike Krzyzewski to coach a sixth grade team, I tell people. But it's tough. It's not easy to find good people to volunteer their time to coach them teams. But like you're saying, you got to go down there and you know, hey, and this might sound simple, but we try to give them gear and get them involved. You know, the more time we give them a pullover that says Jackson basketball or a golf shirt, we joke about it all the time. You know, hey, let's give them some nice Nike gear and make sure they feel part of the program at that level too. And like you're saying, the big piece is just getting involved. We've been pretty fortunate that, you know, the Kyle Youngs of the world and Evan Bay, I go down the list of a couple of Division I players that we've had. They always give back, and the kids see that, and they look up to them kids. I mean, I know to this day, Kyle Young, I mean, this is last year at Ohio State, and kids will go down there and wear Kyle Young jerseys, and it's pretty cool. But as the coaching staff, I mean, we meet all the time. You know, I meet with, you know, people. My wife said, where are you going? I do more meetings just to make sure everybody's on the same page. Like, I meet with the middle school staff 5 times a year, and then, you know, the youth coaches. And this, I think that's important to, you know, this, throw some things out there. You know, yeah, it is. You type it up, and this, at least you got a hard copy. This is what we want you to do at the 7th and 8th grade level. We're going to do that next week. It starts next week already. So we'll meet with the 7th and 8th grade coaches. I know we've been doing open gyms with them and already. So we're kind of putting things in place right now. It's a crucial time, especially with the COVID and the weird stuff going on in the world. And schools, we've been fortunate. We've been in school for 8 weeks, so in person. So I just think it's big to be, you know, face-to-face with kids. We're going to have a parent meeting here in a couple of weeks, and once we pick our teams, October 30th. So it's right around the corner. You know, it's like a vicious cycle. I tell people it's a process. Every year you want to put seeds and things in place, you know, early. And it's like, this is another year. It's like you start with – we got our stuff out for travel, in-house league for youth kids and – middle school open gyms, and obviously we've been gone since June 1st, and it's just a process. I mean, you got to keep grinding, keep getting better. And my aspect of the booster club has been important for us because they kind of challenged me too. Like, coach, what are you doing this year different? And that always helps, you know, me grow as a coach to have people maybe pushing me and calling me out on some things. And coach, what are you doing for the youth program that can be better this year? And you got to have that support staff. I think the support staff is so crucial at our level, even hiring good people. I mean, I got probably a couple guys that's been head coaches and moved on, and I got a guy named John Perdue that's been here for 22 years, and you need those guys. Every program needs those guys, you know. I've had an 8th grade coach been here for 28 years, so we've been fortunate in that aspect too. I call him the liaison of our 7th grade and our 8th grade middle school program, so. But, you know,
yeah, to have guys that have been around that kind of know the lay of the land, they're, you know, sort of anchors in the community. I think there's tremendous value in having those people a part of your staff up and down, regardless of whether it's at the varsity level or the lower levels, to be able to have those people that I think when there's alignment from the varsity head coach on down and everybody's bought into the same plan, the same idea, the same goal, the same mission. To me, that's where you can really start to have great things happen. It's where you have an organization led by a head coach where people aren't on the same page and people have different agendas. That's where you can start to get into trouble. And I think that's something that, especially young and maybe inexperienced coaches, you know, you sometimes the fit is really important and the buy-in from your staff is really important. I think that comes from the top, and you kind of have to set a tone in order to make that happen.
You know, I say this in a good way. I mean, let's face it, we're a pretty decent sized public school, but The kids walk, I say this all the time, kids are walking our hallways. We have to get better. We're not getting kids from all over the place like some of these private schools. It is what it is. Hey, me and you can sit here and bellyache about, hey, we got to get through the Catholic schools. We got to get through the private schools to get to Columbus and what's that. Guess what? It's not changing. So guess what we got to do as coaches here at Jackson? We have to find a way to up our ante about how we're going to get these kids walking the hallways better to beat those teams. I mean, you look at back the years that we went to state title. We had to go through Toledo St. John's, a good school that had major Division I players, to beating Cleveland St. Ed's in the state semifinals, to beating Muller, a powerhouse. So, hey, you got to figure it out. And it's not going away, I don't think. You know, so as a public school, you're going to have up and downs. And you know, we understand that. We're, you know, there's going to be a wave of, hey, we might be down for 2 years. But, you know, something, we don't want to do that. We want every year to be good and every kid to have a special year. So that aspect of, like you're saying, about building program is so crucial, because you don't want to have a letdown year, because, I mean, it's going to happen. But you're not going to get a Kyle Young, you know, and a Mark Henninger come to her school every year, you know, we can recruit in. So we've been pretty blessed with some talent in this last 10, 12 years. And even before, you know, Mike got here and before I got here, you know, Larry Taylor had Jamie Bosley, played Ohio State and Akron. So I think this development and the kids that walk the hallway, we got to get better, man. That's the bottom line.
So what do you do year in and year out when you come into a new year? Obviously, you have a philosophy of what you want to play, what you want to teach, and how you want to teach it. How much do you tweak what you do based on the personnel that you have in any given year? So in other words, what does your planning look like? Obviously, you're working with your kids all summer in the workouts and going to team camps and playing in summer league. So you have a pretty good feel of what you have coming back and what your team's going to look like. But what does the planning process look like for you going into a year? What are you thinking about when you're trying to design your schemes? What are you trying to think about when you're putting together practice plans heading into the year? How different is that from year to year based on the kids that you have that are going to be a part of your varsity team?
You know, it's so funny you mentioned that. We probably start with, you know, our depth chart from 7th, 8th, 9th, JV and varsity, and then you're like, what's it going to look like? You know, what's our top 8? What's our... And we're drawing up these depth charts every time we go out to, you know, dinner and sitting around. We got up on the board. It's like, now we got to, you know, adjust. You know, we're always trying to change things up. And, you know, you're going to run your typical stuff. I mean, I love, you know, growing up, you know, playing for Coach Grant. We pressed. I mean, that's not going to go away. I know some of our coaches say, Coach, why are we pressing, man? You know, why are we doing this? But that's who we are, man. Sometimes, we can always reel back. I say this all the time to our coaches. You know, we press every day in practice. It's easier to maybe reel back to play half court man than, you know, it's tougher to go from playing half court man to press. So that aspect, you know, we're always going up and down, and that philosophy will never go away. Because that's how you got to play. You got to play in game situations. But the kids that we have, we kind of pencil them in and piece them in, you know, where we're going to do some things. But we've been running some similar stuff the last 16 years, but you know, I got to the point where, you know, this sounds like a football cliche. I got a defensive coordinator and an offensive coordinator, you know. So if the superintendent says, hey, you ain't scoring enough points, I'm going to fire the offensive coordinator, just like the college. Hey, if we're not stopping people, the defensive coordinator is going to get fired. So we kind of work together that aspect. That kind of put some guys on a, you know, that aspect of giving them some responsibility as assistant coaches too the last probably 7 or 8 years, and more so. You know, some of these younger guys, they want to be coaches, you know, head coaches. Hey, this is your opportunity. You take over the defense, offense. Hey, create some new ideas. Give me some new ideas. You know, go. So we're always beating our head, you know, up and down, you know, with our offensive coordinators, to everybody defense, and try to change some things up. But, you know, I told everybody, listen, we're not going to go away from man to man. So you got some other philosophies, and that's fine. But we're going to press, and we can do some other traps. And but guess what? At the end of the day, we're going to go back to man-to-man. So, I don't know when the last time we played zone. But you never know. It could go in there one day. You know, it could change too. You know, I think you got to adapt to your talent too, like you're saying. And, you know, we will if we have to. But we've been fortunate. We've had a nice little run where we, you know, can kind of do the same thing over and over. So, But look, always looking to improve stuff. You know, that's the good ones do. I mean, I'm not saying we're good, but and we're trying at least, you know, to change some things up and try to get better.
So where do you go to look for new things to incorporate? You obviously you're talking to your assistants and they're going out and looking at different things, but where do you go now as a veteran head coach? Are you watching tape of other teams? Or what are you doing to improve? Where are you looking for little wrinkles that you can add into what you already do?
I'll be honest with you, like every year we make a coach's trip, like 3 nights somewhere. Like I'll give you a prior example. We'll go down to say we went down to Duke, North Carolina, and North Carolina State just to pick up some ideas every year. Or the 1 year we went to Michigan State. We try to hit about 3 different schools every time we go on a 3-day trip with the coaching staff. But kind of, you know, we kind of pick some things that we want to pick up. And then even we stay local, we go to Akron, Kent, and well, if we see a lot of college practices, maybe pick up some ideas. Like even if it's some new drills just to stay, you know, sharp or break up the monotonous. You know how it is when you're a player and, you know, the coach is going to run this. We try to switch it up. But,
yep.
You know, you want to pick some teams like that has your same philosophy too a little bit. You know, we've been all over the place. I mean, the 1 year we went to Pittsburgh, Duquesne, and Robert Morris. I thought Virginia did some good things, so we went down there 1 year. I really, when Villanova, you know, won a national championship, they were diamond pressing back into a man. I really liked that. Kind of sold me on that half court trap back into a man, just to slow up a team or get them out of the rhythm. But maybe just going to these practices, maybe, hey, what can we incorporate into our philosophy? And that's been pretty good. We always steal, you know how it is. We flew out to Arizona with Sean Miller and stayed out here and went over his house. And to this day, that was probably 12 years ago. And we used probably 3 or 4 of their sets that we got from Coach Miller at Arizona. So I think just stealing some ideas here and there and incorporating our program helps out a little bit. Been fortunate to do that. And that it goes back to this. Having fun coaching, I think that's important too. I tell our coaches all the time, we got to have fun. If you're not having fun doing this, man, let's get the hell out. You know,
yep, absolutely.
And there's got to be a part of me and the coach staff. Like I said, it can't be all. You got to have fun what you're doing. I mean, you were gonna do this for 30 years or teach for 30 years. You better get out of education if you're not enjoying it or having fun. So some guy told me that early in my career. So to the point, we got to have fun. Coaches, you know, we're really close because we do stuff all the time. We go to football games together. We go to practices together. We go to scout together. So that's important, you know, as a head coach, maybe make sure you have good relationships with all your assistants in middle school. I think that's a vital part of being successful, you know, and guys like being around the program and picking the right guys that, you know, they're investing some time and care about our kids, you know. And right now we do got that. You know, obviously coaches come and go and – you're gonna have that because you know a lot of coaches. It's a lot of time. You know, it's a 12-month job. You know, and some people, you know, you got families, and I get it. You know, they can't put the time in, so it's not easy. You know, to be on top, there's a lot of time goes into it, and like you say, in the process of we got to change some things this year. I mean, we got to get back and win some games. I mean, we had a down year last year, and we got to figure it out. You know, and we got some time, and we've been working on some things. And we got our coaches will meet next week. You know, you guys don't want to meet just to meet. We're gonna get something done if we're gonna meet. So we're gonna meet next week with the 7th and 8th grade coaches, and all the freshman JV and varsity coaches will meet. So we gotta get going. It's time to go. And like I said, you kind of have things put in place. Like every year, we meet certain times, and We're going to watch Ohio State practice because this is Kyle's last year. Maybe watch practice at Dayton and Cincinnati this year. So that'll be our trip this year. Maybe steal some ideas from them coaches. And
absolutely. So what are some – once you get into the season, what does your day-to-day practice planning look like? Are you writing the practice plan yourself, and then when are you doing it? Or are you doing it collaboratively with the rest of the coaching staff? Are you writing it first and then sharing it with the staff? Just what's your process in season for putting together a practice plan so that you can make sure that you maximize the time that you have out on the floor with your kids?
Yeah, you know, I like practicing obviously 2 hours, you know, in the beginning, maybe 2 hours and 15 minutes. I think after that, the kids kind of lose focus. But I mean, you're probably going to laugh at me, but you know, I remember seeing Krzyzewski handwritten his practice plan. So I thought, man, I'm just going to handwrite all these practice plans. Because you know how it is. If you type it, you might not delete stuff. You might do the same thing. So I start out early. I probably at night before I chicken scratch a practice plan. The next day I rewrite it again. I'll rewrite it again. I probably rewrite my practice plan 4 times before practice. And once I get it done at like 12 o'clock, I'll shoot it out to the coaches. Now with technology, it makes it awesome. And then if they want to change something, and then after each practice, I say, guys, hey, give me some ideas. Let's stay after practice for 10, 15 minutes, write up on the board. I'll take a picture of it. I'll incorporate it. Just try to keep them involved too, so they feel part of, you know, what we're going to do better. But now just rewriting the practice plan, just thinking, like I told you before, I got all my practice plans, shoot, probably for 28 years since I've been coaching. Going through some stuff, what can we work on? Different practice, you know, shooting drills, to everything. What kind of process is going to be? What we need to work on before the first game? Do we need to put out a bounce plays in? Do we need to, what's going to look like? You know, I think an important part of our off season right now, we've always done this. We scrimmage the best teams in the state of Ohio in the off season. We always try to scrimmage the best teams. So, we got Moeller this year at Moeller. You know, a lot of times, like, gosh, Coach, why are you driving 4 hours to scrimmage Moeller? Well, that's the only way you get better. You got to play those teams. So, and the coaches probably, some of them probably bellyache, hey, we got to go on a Saturday all day, or we're going down to Columbus. You know, we've had to play them same St. V's of the world. And it really helps our kids, you know, to just to, you know, we're playing the best program. So, but to go back to the practice, but there, you know, you look at every year, what are you going to work on different? And I let the coaches too to chime in too after every practice and have them part of the practice plan. And they're constantly doing the breakdown drills and try to run it like a college practice plan, you know, to a certain extent.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. When you were talking about scheduling, what's your philosophy or what advice would you have for a high school coach who has at least some degree of control over their schedule in terms of balancing out? I guess it kind of depends a little bit on where your program is, obviously. But I know as a player and as a coach, I always felt like, for me, it was more beneficial to play better teams and get my team prepared for the state tournament as opposed to scheduling victories. And I get it if you're in a situation where there aren't many victories to be had in your league and your program's down and you're just trying to turn it around, that maybe you have to schedule one way. But to me, and it sounds like you're of the same mindset, that the only way to get better is, you know, let's schedule the best teams and maybe we only go 500 in our non-league games. But when the time comes for us to be prepared to play against good competition in the tournament, we're going to be ready, as opposed to scheduling 8 victories that aren't really going to help us get prepared.
Yeah, you know, I mentioned it kind of starts. I mean, regardless of who you scrimmage, you're going to be 0-0.
Right, true. Yep.
You know, I tell our coach, let's just get 5 best scrimmages you can get. You know, whatever happens there, and get you ready for the first game. We always kind of like to start with a pretty solid game. I know we're going to Buchtel this year, and they got the Livingston kid coming in. But and then, you know, always schedule a tough game at the end of the season to get you ready for that tournament. I know we got St. Ignatius at the end of the season. The 1 year, I think, propelled us to maybe win a state title. We lost to St. V at home from a sellout crowd at the buzzer. Maybe that them things kind of resonates. You know, there for a while when I thought we were going to be good. You know how it is. When you think you're going to be good, I think you got to schedule good teams.
Right.
I can't stand coaches that, you know, they know they're going to be 20-0, and they want to be 20-0, but I'd rather be 19-1, 18-2, and get you ready for playoffs. So, you know, that's got to be – that's always been our philosophy. I mean, at least mine. I don't know, like, there for a while, I knew we were going to be good. The team that won the state, I wanted to play that team. I had to, hey, let's get that team on the schedule. So, Mentor won it the 1 year, we want to get them. Wayne Huber Heights, we worked out a deal with Wayne Huber Heights when they won the state. So, every time when someone won a state title, I'm like, God, we got to get them on the schedule, you know, just to – see, you know what? That's tell our kids. This is what it takes, you know. And we done that like, I don't know, 6 years in a row. But I don't know if we're gonna do that now. But I can tell you, Moeller's probably gonna want a state title this year. So I knew we were gonna go try to scrimmage them. So like I said, I love going to different places and scrimmages. I really go away for scrimmages. You know, I always have maybe 3 or 4 away scrimmages and maybe 1 or 2 home. But get our kids on the road and seeing different. Good competition.
Absolutely. So how do you get, I think this is a question that maybe a a coach who is at a program that is not at the same stage of success that yours is might have, and that is, how do you get the parents of your players to buy into some of the things that you're talking about? Now, obviously, the track record of success makes it a lot easier, but let's say you're just more at the beginning of this process instead of where you are in it, and you're saying, hey, we're going to get in a, you know, we're going to get in cars, or we're going to get in a van, or we're going to get in a school bus, or we're going to travel 4 hours to go scrimmage, or we're going to be doing these workouts, or your kid's going to have to get up and coach kindergartners on Saturday morning. What do you do to engage the parents that helps you to get buy-in so that you can do all the things that you're doing that you know are required in order to be at the level of success that you guys are at?
Yeah. You know, I tell people this all the time, and you probably think I'm crazy, but so, you know, right after Labor Day, you know, September, I don't know, 4th, whatever that is, that date, we meet with everybody, freshman all the way through. We kind of tell them, this is what we do in September, October, November, the season, all that. How could you get involved with our fundraisers, the whatever we do, you know, our youth tournament. So I talk for about an hour and a half, just give them everything. And then when once we pick the teams, we meet with the parents again, obviously. And then I think it's been big that we meet with the parents like April 1st, you know, hey, this is what we're going to do for the summer. This is what we expect from our kids. And kind of, I mean, people are like, hey, you know, it takes some time, but it's worth it. Be honest with you, you know, they communicate to the parents, and I say this all the time, and people laugh at me. I give them hard copies, and people, hey, coach, why are you giving them hard copies? I burned so many trees, probably, but so they can't say, hey, coach, I lost it in the email, or you didn't text me, or so at least they got the hard copy out there. I get involved. We always have a senior parent, the kid that starts. That parent, I sit down with that parent and say, listen, this is what I expect out of you. You're going to send out some emails for me. This is, you know, organized team feeds. I think that's important to get our kids team feeds every Thursday night. We're having guest speakers every Thursday, you know, a 10, 15 minute guest speaker, whoever that might look like, you know, a few line to a, you know, inspiration speaker, whatever that might look like. But kind of just lay it out for the parents too, just because I think that goes along with parents. If they know what's going on, and they don't come back and say, hey, coach, you never told me about that stuff in the summer, but this is, you know, this is what we do. So I think that's important, man, to meet with the parents. I mean, I know that takes some time, but, and I put my number out there. You know, that'll be the first thing I tell parents. I say, listen, you got a problem with anything in our program, you think, just call me, 330-896-1468. And people are looking at me like, what the hell is he doing giving his phone number out to everybody in Jackson? But I don't care. I mean, he called me. You know, it's our program. That's what, like you're saying, you got to be invested. And I think that's important that they know that they can contact me. I mean, obviously, I don't want to get 8,000 phone calls, but I get some. Emails or text. You know, this day and age, people are scared to call. They'll email you. So sometimes that's easier, but. No, I just think that's important. I don't know. I think as a young coach, I mean, I would do that in a heartbeat. Meet with the parents, give them hard copies, tell them your expectations, and that goes a long way, I think.
I think proactive communication is something that I hear you saying. I think I hear it from other coaches too, that if you can get out ahead of it and build a relationship with parents and let them know up front that these are the expectations, this is what you're going to do, this is how we're going to do it, then if something does come up later on where the parent has a problem or has a question or wants to know something, if you've already built a relationship with that person, it's a lot easier than to go back and have that, what some people might consider to be a difficult conversation with them about something within the program, if you've already established the relationship, as opposed to that's the first time you've ever had any communication with them and now you're trying to, you know, you're trying to discuss this more difficult issue. I think that sometimes can be where you have a problem. If you're proactive, you can head off a lot of those problems before you even get to the point where they become an issue for parents.
I agree with you. I mean, even to the simplest thing, I tell them, listen, I'm not just here to coach basketball. Listen, you're going to hear me call you about your kid's grades, his social life, to how he's acting. I mean, I'll tell them the whole gamut of that. And that's the big thing that, you know, we're going to try to get their ACT scores up. We're going to try to do this. Because I think that's important that they see different aspects, how we can, you know, help their sons out, you know, in life in general, you know, and we care more than just basketball. I mean, we're going to keep an eye on these suckers, you know. And I mean, I call kids all the time, hey, grades ain't good. You know, I call their parents. And, you know, that's the simplest thing, you know, a two-minute conversation with a parent, you know, that helps out a little bit. Like you're saying, being proactive. And I got the copies right in front of them. I mean, I can't say enough how much that's helped out, just kind of combating, you know, because, you know, in a big school, you have to cut so many kids, or they kind of figure it out. You know, you can only play five kids on the basketball court, I say. I mean, it's not easy, you know, and it's a tough situation. You go all the way through a program, you might not be that top five or six kids, and I don't know, you maybe get involved in something else. But
that's the positive and negative of basketball, right? The positive is that, you know, if you start thinking about putting together a program, you know, if you get six or seven kids, you can win with that. And yet at the same time, you think about what you're starting out with at your youth camp, where you know, go back to the top of our conversation, you got 400 kids, and, you know, attrition's going to wear those kids out, and you're only going to end up with, you know, there's not going to be as many kids that are going to get that opportunity to play. And so you have to, I think that goes to what you talked about just a second ago, which is you got to have an impact on them through your program in more than just the game of basketball. You got to have a relationship with them where you're concerned about their grades, you're concerned about their social life, you're concerned about them as people, so that even if you have a kid who's on one of your two eighth grade teams and that kid doesn't make the team as a freshman, well, hopefully he learned more from your program than just how to shoot a left-handed layup. Hopefully in seventh and eighth grade, he got more out of it. I think that's what the best coaches do. And I think that's what really develops pride in the program, where people who have been a part of it, that maybe they don't make it to that ultimate prize of being a varsity player, but they still are bought in all through the process because they know that you and your coaching staff cares about them and is putting the time in to invest in them as not just basketball players, but as students and as people. And again, parents appreciate that.
Yeah, and that's, you know, one of the toughest things I deal with, I think, personally. And when we cut kids or let kids go, it kind of wears on me, you know. And that's one thing, you know, you hate to cut kids, because what are they doing outside of basketball, Mike, you know? I always think, like, hey, do you have something to fall back on? Is there a baseball kid? And I don't know if that's a good or bad, but this kind of sits in the back of my head. Like, you know, that's the only frustrating part. It's one of our jobs that, you know, probably got to let kids go, and we got to cut them. And that's not easy. People think it might be easy, but, I mean, I take that to heart, man. For 3 or 4 days, I like, how we cut this kid? Like, what's he going to do? You know, I'll go see him in the hallway, or go maybe – a week later, see how they're doing. It's just, that's part of our job, but that's one of the toughest part, I think. If you know what are the kids doing, especially with this day and age of all the stuff going on with anxiety and I don't know, just the peer pressure, and it's different. I mean, it's different. I mean, I say this all the time. Every situation is different. We've been blessed to have some good things, and then, you know, on the flip side, you know, some people have better than us. So. Every situation is different, and you know, the situation we've been in, we just got to try to do the best we can and be, you know, be positive role models as coaches. But I enjoy it, you know, and as a coach, I mean, I can't say that enough. I mean, I enjoy what I do. It's been a great 28 years of coaching. I wrote down some stuff and I told my coaches I'm retired, and they got all mad at me, but I said, it's been good, guys. I joke around about it, but it's been pretty good the last 28 years, this journey. And like I said, I could talk all night with you, Mike, because you're the kind of person you are. I could just see the passion that we got for sports and basketball. But that's what sports does to you, man. It does, you know, it teaches a lot of life lessons, and it gives you a couple curveballs too during the way, the whole thing, man, is just dealing with kids and parents, and it's not easy sometimes. But you know, you got to do it. It's a job. We try to do the best we can as coaches, and you know, sometimes it don't work out with parents or kids, and that's where I feel bad. Like, God, I wish we could keep him, or I wish we could help him. You know, and everybody's been in that situation, you know, and
yeah, for sure.
You feel bad. You know, you want to help. You know, we're in the coaching and teaching to help kids out, not to cut kids. And part of our job, we cut, you know, football don't cut, track don't cut, them type of sports, lacrosse. And so, you know, when you're cutting kids, it's not easy, but that's part of the job, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, to go along with what you just said in terms of what you've been through as a coach, I want you to look both back and forward with this last question. That is, what is, first of all, your biggest challenge as you look ahead, what's the biggest challenge? It could be for this season, for getting through the coronavirus, for just on the horizon the next 5 years. What's your biggest challenge? And then number two, what's your biggest joy? When you think about being a high school basketball coach at Jackson High School, what's the one thing when you pop out of bed in the morning, first thing that comes into your head that you're like, man, I can't wait to get to work because of this? So your biggest challenge and your biggest joy, and then we'll wrap things up.
All right. You know, I mean, the challenge through obviously this time is kind of crazy. I just, my philosophy is the kids need sports, and that's what gets kids through high school and even getting me through high school and college. And I just think that's important. Be interaction, be part of a team. That's been always my philosophy. You know, make it a good experience. Every kid needs a good experience. I don't care where you're at in the city, suburban, wherever. The kid needs coaching. They need structure. And that's part of our job, you know, to give these kids structure and be part of their lives. So that's the biggest thing with me, man. I think that the challenge this year, I mean, I would love to get back to Columbus with anybody. I mean, that's our goal as coaches. I'd like to see the next 5 years. Hopefully, you know, big thing, you know, your health's got to be there, Mike. I mean, I've had some up and downs. I mean, heart attack, whatever, you know. You just got to, I think your health's got to be there. Your passion's got to be there. You got to keep grinding. You can't, I think coaches kind of get, some coaches, they kind of coast, as you could say, or just kind of get, they don't want to change things up. I think you got to keep changing things up. You got to keep improving. How can you improve your program every year? And that's what we're trying to look at through every year. That's what I tell our booster club. What can we improve our program here? And I tell our coaches that. I tell myself that. I look in the mirror, like, do I still love this? Am I passionate enough to get up in the morning? So, all right, we'll go on to the next question. About, you know, the joy is, you know, and I know this, and this sounds repetitive, but, you know, we pray before the game, and I say this all the time. I've been blessed to have a good situation and get this job and be part of two state championships. But more importantly, just been surrounded by a lot of good people and people that's helped me through my career. And I don't know, it's been a journey, but, and I can tell you it hasn't been easy. And people think it's easy, just Coach Beck, you know, jumping forward, joy and stuff. But that's why when you see the kids celebrate after we won 2010 and 2017, then you know, it all sinks in. It's like, you know, this is amazing. You know, to see these kids and grown adults act like 5-year-olds and celebrating, and it was special, you know, and that's all we want. You know, every day I wake up and I joke with my wife, I put on a pair of golf shorts, you know, golf pants and a golf shirt and go to school. And that's something I enjoy doing, and it's never been a job, and coach has never been a job. It's been a fun job. I mean, it's never act like that. It's just something I love to do and passionate about, and being around the kids. And shoot, I can coach till, you know, I'm probably going to die in my sneakers. I tell my coaches I'm going to retire, you know, every year, and they look at me like I'm nuts. So who knows? Like I said, if my health's good and I enjoy what I'm doing, and I don't know, basketball's gave me everything to go back to that. And that's why I just want the kids to have a positive experience. And like this being tonight, man, it's 11:30. I can do this every night, man. I don't go to bed till 12 o'clock, so I'm good with this. And I appreciate, like people like you that are still involved and just getting out there, maybe helping some young coaches and doing this. I mean, this, I think people need to communicate now, you know, and that's, to go back to the first question, I think us communicating, trying to get through these hard times is going to be important. You know, I talked to probably 10 people a day when we were in the pandemic in March and April, just to, I don't know, just to talk to people. I mean, I go nuts just not talking to people and being around people. So you doing this and Jason, I mean, it helps out, man. I mean, I think it helps if you can just – it goes back to going to these clinics. If you can just pick up one thing or two things that can help someone or help a young coach or help a kid, it goes a long way.
Absolutely, Tim. I can't thank you enough for taking an hour and a half out of your schedule to talk some hoops with us. It's been a lot of fun kind of going back and – reminiscing and thinking about the things that, you know, we did when we were kids, and then going on up through the tremendous success that you've been able to have at Jackson. And I just have a lot of respect for what you've been able to do in the game. And I'm just so appreciative of you taking the time to talk to us for an hour and a half tonight, share with the coaching profession, share with our audience. And we really, really do appreciate it. Before we get out of here, just give people an idea of where they can find out more about you and your program. maybe share, I know you have a Twitter account for the program. Just share how people can reach out to you. I know you already gave your cell number out, but if you want to do that again, feel free, and then I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
You know, we have, and I told you we incorporate everything. So if you looked on Jackson Youth Basketball Association, anything that we do to fundraisers, to our sign-up sheets now, our tournament, youth tournament coming up, our 7th, 8th grade stuff on there, the rosters. And obviously, you know, you mentioned, you know, with the Jackson Basketball Twitter. But I think that website's pretty good. We got to update a little bit. I mean, this is 2020, so hopefully we keep working on that. I think that's vital that, you know, we update our webpage. But it's the Jackson Youth Basketball Association. It kind of gives all the information of what we do and how, you know, this goes through everything that we want to do with our philosophy, to our mission statement, to our coaching staff. And there's numbers on there, who's on our board, and how you can contact people for our youth program. And that's where it starts, you know, and we're, it's one program. It's not Tim DeBevick's program. It's, you know, the whole Jackson Township, Jackson basketball program. So that's it.
Awesome. Tim, can't thank you enough for spending almost an hour and a half with us tonight. It's been an absolute pleasure. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
If you have an existing podcast or are looking to launch your own pod but aren't sure where to start, the team at My Podcast Manager can help. Our podcast team works behind the scenes so you can do what you do best. We'll help you launch your podcast, make it sound great, and free up your time for the more enjoyable parts of podcasting. If you're ready to put your podcast editing, production, and promotion on autopilot with a trusted team of podcasting professionals, visit mypodcastmanager.com to get started.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.